Good afternoon, and welcome to today's online teaching, Malas and How to Use Them. My name is Cheryl. I'll be your host today. I'm a student of Nakpa Jigbal Chopul, otherwise known as Michael Madrone, and webmaster of his website. To start this presentation, we'll recite the refuge prayer three times. I go for refuge until enlightenment. To the Buddha, Dharma, and Noble Assembly, all my mother sentient beings are suffering in cyclic existence. I must free them by attaining enlightenment for the sake of all beings. I go for refuge until enlightenment to the Buddha, Dharma, and Noble Assembly. All my mother sentient beings are suffering in cyclic existence. I must free them by attaining enlightenment for the sake of all beings. I go for refuge until enlightenment to the Buddha, Dharma, and Noble Assembly. All my mother sentient beings are suffering in cyclic existence. I must free them by attaining enlightenment for the sake of all beings.
We're going to talk about malas. Thank you for requesting this. So malas are sometimes called rosaries in other religions. Interestingly enough, a lot of different religions use objects like this. We usually say malas because normally that indicates Buddhist rosaries. So actually, mala means garland. So it's like a garland of flowers. Why do we use malas? There's a few reasons. One is, if we say mantras, malas are associated with mantras, okay? But when we say the mantra and we use the mala, we're using our bodies, so we're creating physical karma and physical merit. So we talk about body, speech, and mind. So this is our body. Our speech is when we say the mantra, and our mind is when we focus on it. If you say a mantra and your mind is not focused on it, it doesn't count. And that's been made very clear by masters over the centuries, that it's not just saying the words, but it's also focusing on what you're doing. And there's different ways of focusing depending on the mala and the mantra and the practice and so on. But you should at least have awareness of what you're saying. As far as the speech goes, traditionally, this isn't 100% true, but traditionally, it's said that you should voice the mantra very softly so that you involve your speech. If you just think about it, you're not involving your speech. You don't get the speech merit and the speech blessing. Okay. So traditionally, it's said that the way to voice it is very low, as if there was a little tiny guy on your shoulder, about that high. And he could hear it, like, oh, money, baby, money, baby, money, baby. You don't need to shout it. You don't need to make a big deal about it. But if you do, and sometimes you'll see people saying mantras and it sounds like they're just mumbling or murmuring. They're talking to the little guy on their shoulder. And so that's an indication of the amount of voice or volume. And that's a traditional teaching. There are some exceptions to that, of course. So body, speech, and mind blessing. So that's one reason that we use malas. Another reason is to count. A lot of practices are done with a certain number of repetitions of a mantra. And it could be a small number or a large number. Generally speaking, traditionally malas have 108 beads usually. If you count the spacers, it might be 111. Sometimes they have lots of spacers. Spacers are the little things in the, can you see that? That's a spacer. That's like an extra bead. If you are doing a counting practice, when you do 108 or 111 or whatever it is, you only count 100 because you figure you probably spaced out for eight of them. So they don't count. So you don't count those. So traditionally, if you do a practice of, say, 100,000, you count 111,000, for example. And that's, I think, even being generous. That's the traditional mala with 108. and it's used for counting. Now, if you're doing a large number of practices, you have these supplemental counters, and there's two of them. There's one on each side, and they have 10 rings that can be slid up. I don't know if you can see that. I slid one of them up. So when I do one mala, I slide one up. So that's a place marker that I did 100, and then I slid two of them up. That's 200, 300, 400, up to 10, which is 1,000. Okay, so that you can remember how many you did without remembering how many you did. They're counters. Now, typically you have two counters. One is a Dorje and one is a bell. These are all backwards on my screen, so it's kind of tricky. Anyway, traditionally you start on the Dorje side of it. And when you do one complete side on the Dorje side, in other words, you pushed up the rings 10, you've done 1,000. Then you go over to the bell side and you push up one ring on the bell side, and the bell side marks 1,000. And then you go back over to the Dorje side and you push them all down to the bottom again. You start over and you do 100, 200, 300, 400, and up to another 1,000. And then you switch to the bell side and you push the second ring up and you got 2,000. So that way you can count up hundreds on one side, 1,000 on the other side. When you get up to 10,000 on the bell side, there is a third kind of counter. There's a third kind of counter. And this is a kind of a clasp that you start down at the bottom, what's called the guru bead, and you put your counter down there in the first notch after the first bead, and that counts the 10,000s. So if you're doing 100,000 practice, you need to do 10 of those. So these are counting tools. So that's another reason that we use them, is keeping track without making yourself crazy trying to keep track. And it's pretty simple to do, it's pretty easy. Some people that do super big amounts of numbers, they have two of these. But then you're getting up to in really big numbers. But some practices have really big numbers. That's another function. And then a third function of malas is to just keep your mindfulness, keep your focus. If you have something in your hand and you're using it and you're reciting, it's another help keep you grounded in your body while you're doing your practice, so you don't space out. So it's a mindfulness tool. So those are some of the reasons that we use malas. It's a good idea to have them blessed, and we'll talk about this at the end. Now, there's all kinds of different kinds of malas. My suggestion, which is actually something that I've heard teachers say, and I agree with, is it's probably better, at least in the beginning, to get a kind of a regular mala, a simple mala, not fancy, made out of wood or something, kind of plain, so that you don't fall into the tendency to think of it as jewelry or beautiful, adornment. So in that sense, we don't normally wear it around our neck, like a necklace. And my teacher said that you shouldn't put it on your wrist. Sometimes you see people putting the mala on their wrist like that. And my teacher said you shouldn't do that unless you're an authorized teacher. So you see movie stars and people running around, and there's really no point. You don't need to show off the fact that you're a Buddhist or that you have a mala or that you say practices. There's no need for that. The general advice is don't wear it on your wrist, don't wear it around your neck. However, having said that, you should always have one on you, like in your pocket. And I've seen lamas rebuke students because they showed up for practice and didn't have their mala, and they said, "Oh, I left my mala in my car. Oh, well." And the lama rebuked them and said, "No, that's not the proper attitude. Go out to your car and get your mala. You should always have it with you." So it's a good idea if you don't want to get rebuked to have your mala with you at all times. And if you have pockets, like I keep one in my pocket, and I just, if I'm walking down the street or something, I don't even have to take it out. I can say it in my, leaving it hidden, so I don't have to show off that I'm Mr. Buddhist. Now, as far as how to actually handle it, there's different ways to handle it. A lot of people think that you use your left hand all the time, but that's not actually true. It depends on the practice. But generally speaking, you will see people using their left hand a lot, and that's okay. And there's different ways of actually fingering the bead. One way is to pull the bead down towards you, and that symbolizes that you're pulling in the blessing from the mantra. You pull it down. Pull it towards you as if you're pulling it in. Another way is to kind of rub a circle around the bead as you're saying, "Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum." You're rubbing it in a circular motion. That's another style. If you can't do it with one hand, use two hands. There's different styles for hand position. Some people say you should hold your left hand at your heart, and your bottom hand should be cupping it like that. That's one style. There's other styles, but I've seen lots of lamas just do this. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. That's certainly fine. I have this little problem with my hands, so I use two hands all the time. There's no such thing as mala hell. You won't be punished for using two hands. And also, Lama Jampa said, if you got a physical challenge, Buddha give you a dispensation. So don't worry about it. What's the most important thing is your mind, your motivation, your practice. So find a style that works for you. It's the old saying, what's the best style? It's the one that you actually do. So that's some ideas. There's other ideas too, I'm sure. If you really look, you'll run into different ways, different styles, and why we use them. So there are different numbers of beads on malas. And as I said before, a lot of people think malas are always 108, and that's not true. There are what are called wrist malas. You may have seen these. And frankly, I used to think that this was a Western invention to sell beads. But actually, after doing some research, I found out that that's not true, that these are actually traditional mala, traditionally worn on your wrist. That's fine if you want to have one. I'll give you my experience so you don't make the mistake I did, which is there's different ways of stringing these things, and typically these days they're strung with stretchy stuff, whatever that is, kind of elastic type stuff, which is really cool and really convenient because they slide over your wrist easily. However, one day I was sitting on the bus and the little stretchy stuff broke, and all my beads went tumbling on the floor of the bus everywhere. And the bus driver had to get on the loudspeaker and warn people, please do not exit by the front door because it's dangerous up here. Go out the back door and watch your step because there's all kinds of beads on the floor. I was, of course, embarrassed. So be forewarned if you buy a stretchy kind. My suggestion would be only use it in your pocket. In case it breaks, it'll break in your pocket. There are some wrist malas that are strung with cord. Especially a solid cord is much safer. They very rarely break. And they're also adjustable in their own way, which is this is called the guru bead. The guru bead can be pulled down and then the mala can be expanded so you can get it on your wrist. And then once it's on, you can pull the guru bead back up and make it tight again, and then the little knot slides up to hold it, and then you have it tight around your wrist. So these are harder to find, but they do exist, and they're they don't break as much, and they're very nice. One thing I forgot to mention when I was talking about how to use the counting. Traditionally, when we count around and we get all the way around to the guru bead, the head bead, or what Lama Jampa calls the boss bead, you don't cross over. You turn your mala around and start and go the other direction. So you never cross over the guru bead when you're counting. And the reason that I was told by a lama is that the guru bead represents enlightenment, and we continue to practice until enlightenment. So that's the symbolism of it. And that's a common tradition to not cross over the guru bead. So we have the regular 108 malas. We have the wrist malas. Those are two different kinds. And we also have variations on the number of beads and the materials. Now, for most people, you don't have to worry about this. As I said, the best advice I think is to get a really plain one, solid wood or whatever, that's not too fancy, and just use it. Use it a lot until, and you'll see people that say a lot of malas, their beads get really shiny. However, for example, I practice mantra healing, which is a very complicated, ancient system of healing with mantras. And just for interest's sake, I'll just give you some samples about malas and mantra healing. Different mantras, there's lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of mantras, mantra healing. There's sort of two categories. There's the spiritual mantras like Om Mani Padme Hum, and then there's the medical mantras, or what's called the mantra pharmacy. But those two categories are not rigid. There's a lot of crossover in those two categories. It's just a mental construct to try to organize because there's so many of them. And also, if you have a specific symptom, you can go and look up in the pharmacy, well, if you have epilepsy, you can do this or mantra practice with this kind of mala. And very often the practice is associated with a kind of mala, among other things. So very often a certain color of mala. For example, there are what are called the four activities. If you're doing a peaceful activity, you want to pacify, calm down, for example, a fever or an agitated emotion or wars, anything you want to calm down. Traditionally, you use a white mala because white is considered to be a pacifying color. If you want to do an abundance practice or an increase practice, you want to increase your merit, or you want to make more rain in a drought or something like that. Traditionally, if you do an increasing practice, you use a golden or yellow mala. And then the third is what's called attracting or magnetizing. In that case, you will use a red mala. Because red is an attractive color, attracting color. You want to attract students, or you want to attract a partner, or you want to attract, anything, obviously anything positive. You would use a red mala. And then the fourth category is what's called suppressing. And suppressing practices are normally only done by very, very advanced yogis, very advanced practitioners, because, and those are usually done with either black malas or bone malas. And regular folks like us, normally we don't do those kind of practices, but they do exist. For example, in Tibet, there was an evil king who was doing a religious suppression. He was burning down monasteries and nunneries and killing monastics. You know, he was doing havoc. And so that would be a case where a very high yogi would go in and do a suppression. That's just for our knowledge. We don't need to worry about doing suppression practices yet. Anyway, so those are the colors, and those are just general categories. There's also other types. And then you get into the materials. So if you have a white practice, you could use pearls, you could use crystal. You can use white glass beads and whatever you find that's white or clear for the white practices. In the increasing practices, you might use amber or gold, or in this case, these are yellow glass, ceramics. There's all kinds of materials. And the red, there's all kinds of different red things. You can use rubies, you can use rosewood, red glass beads. Now, one thing to note about, for example, this is rosewood. However, a lot of these woods came from India originally, like rosewood and Bodhi seeds and lotus seeds. And back, a long time ago when I started, it was really easy to get those kind of malas and also really cheaply. But over the years, the malas got more popular and the trees started being cut down and they started running into environmental problems with the trees. And so there are now restrictions on cutting those trees down. What you will typically see these days, for example, this would be sold online as a rosewood mala. It's not rosewood. It's some kind of other wood that got painted. And you will see that with a lot of these woods. Sandalwood is another one. Sandalwood trees have been cut down, and you will see wood which is painted and perfumed and then sold as sandalwood or rosewood or whatever. And also Bodhi seeds, same thing. Just so you know, you're buying a rosewood mala online, you're probably not getting rosewood. But you can visualize that it's rosewood because it's all your mind. And really, like I said, most people don't need to even worry about this. And the same way with suppression malas, like I said, they're usually either black or bone. By the way, if somebody gives you a bone mala, this happened actually to somebody that I know. Somebody that they know picked up a bone mala somewhere and started kind of showing it off. And I didn't know this person, but we had a mutual friend, and I told my friend, that's really not a very good idea. And I advised her to get rid of that bone mala, and she did. She sent it to me. So I had to clean it and purify it and put it in a happy home. But if you run across a bone mala, it's not the best material to be using unless you are a highly advanced yogi or yogini. As we all know, the Buddha attained enlightenment under the Bodhi tree in Bodh Gaya. And the Bodhi trees have seeds. And all of these different kinds of colors and materials and so on and so forth are fine, but the Bodhi seed mala can do any of those. It's considered sacred. And so a lot of times mantra healers will have a Bodhi mala, and then that's all you need. Now, as I said, things have gotten very expensive, and Bodhi malas, which, gee, when I started, they were really cheap. Now they're not only harder to find, but they've gotten very, very expensive. And you can find cheap ones online, but I would be willing to bet a nickel that they're not Bodhi seeds. The real Bodhi seed malas, I mean, generally they start at about $150 US and can go up to $500 US. So they're rare and they're valuable. they're expensive. So that's a little bit about different materials. Also, different practices have different numbers to be used on the mala. So there are some malas, I'm going back to mantra healing now. Some malas are 51 beads. Some malas are 21 beads. You'll have different numbers for different practices. So that's another reason that if you get into mantra healing, you end up with a whole bag full of malas and you might not even still have enough. So a Bodhi seed mala is handy because it covers all of those for you. Now, when, okay, that's enough about mantra healing. Going back to just, regular practice, we have a special mantra that we can say, a special mala blessing mantra, which we say before we do a recitation practice. The mantra for blessing the mala, Om Ruchir Ramani Parvadatai Hum. Actually, that should be Hum in the end, Hung. It's written Hum, but it's pronounced Hung. And you recite this 7 times, and then you blow it on your mala before your practice. And this increases the power of the mantras that you will recite by more than 1 sextillion times. So I know you know what a sextillion is, but I didn't. So if you look it up, it says 10 million times 1 billion. However, as you may or may not know, then the way that cardinal numbers are counted in the US is different from how they're counted in the UK. So in the US, that would be a cardinal number followed by 21 zeros, but in the UK, followed by 36 zeros. So I'm not sure that means you get more merit in Britain or not. But anyway, there is a different number. So you say that mantra before you start your recitation of whatever the practice is, and then you blow that on, and you get a lot more merit. And so this falls in the category of what we call skillful means. And so this is a way of doing things in a skillful way that increases your merit, and then you get enlightened faster. Now, you may, like all mantras, you may see it written with a slight variation, a little syllable here, a little syllable there, and that's very, very common. Don't worry about it. And don't worry about the translation because it's not about translation, it's about the energy. And these mantras are sacred, they're beginningless, and they don't depend on language. It's not about words, it's about energy. So that's a handy thing to know. So if you have a practice that you're doing, say for example, you do compassion practice, chenrezig practice, and you say Om Mani Padme Hum. If you bless your mala first, even if you only said 10 mantras, it's 10 times whatever that big number is. That's something to keep in mind. And of course, at the end, you do your dedication. It's important to have your mala blessed for the same reason. It increases the value of it in terms of merit. So this is a photo of me at the last Lamdre. At the very end, everybody gets to go up and give a kata to His Holiness. And I don't know if you can see it, but on my left hand, which is the wrist, has a little red cord around it. It's not a very clear photo because it's actually taken from a video. But anyway, in my hand, my left hand, is my mala, and I'm handing it, I'm just presenting it to His Holiness. And he knows what I'm doing. I'm asking for him to bless my mala. Now, a great master like His Holiness, all he has to do is touch it. And that's what he's doing. He's just reaching out and touching it. Because there's 600 people behind me in the lineup waiting to get their turn. So it's not like we're going to sit there and talk about, what kind of tea do you like? It's in and out, and there's monk police that are whacking you on the back, move on, move on, move on, So the lamas know this, and so if you just present your mala like that, just give him a chance to have a little touch on one of the beads. That's good enough, and your mala is blessed, and you're good to go. Next, so It's good to get your mala blessed. I had another story where I was, this was a few years ago. I just happened to be downtown here. I had my cell phone and I just, for some reason, happened to check my email. And there was an email to me, actually from somebody I didn't even know, but I happened to be on a mailing list. And this email said, His Holiness the 17th Karmapa is going to be down at the British Columbia Legislature building in 20 minutes in the back. If you want to meet him, go. So I ran down to the legislature building. There was only about 20 people there. We were all lined up. Nobody had any katas because it was, lunch hour for the workers, and people don't normally walk around with a kata, but we were lined up ready anyway. But I had my trusty mala in my pocket, and I was the last one in the lineup, and limousine pulled up. His Holiness got out of the limousine, with the guards and the sunglasses, and and he went down the lineup, so to speak, of the disciples, practitioners. And I had my mala in my hand. I whipped it out of my pocket and I presented it just like in this photo. And sure enough, he knew what to do. He blessed it. So my mala has been blessed a few times over the years by a few different masters. So you never know what your karma is and your propensities are. And if you have your mala in your pocket, you might get it blessed. So that's just a couple of stories. Now, we don't always have access to the Karmapa or the Sakya Treason. However, you can get your mala blessed, by somebody who's authorized, knows how to do it. Somebody like Lama Jampa, or I can do it if you want. There's a ceremony that's done, and I'm happy to do it if you want to give me your mala. I'd be happy to bless it. I do it all the time for people. It takes about a week though, so you need to be willing to let me have it for a week. And I'll do the ceremonies on it and give it back to you, and then your mala will be blessed. Or if you got somebody else you want to take it to, that's fine too. But it is a good idea to have your mala blessed. Blessings are, they're a matter of faith, but doggone it, I believe in them. So it's something that I advise. Better to have a blessed mala than an unblessed mala. Yes, questions. So questions in the chat. Is it appropriate for practitioners to bring their malas to the bedside of a dying person? These kinds of questions, what do you do around people that are dying? The answer is always, it depends. It depends on the dying person because their benefit is the only thing that counts. If they are not a Buddhist and they're not familiar with Buddhism or malas or mantras and stuff, we don't want to freak them out or distract them or agitate them. I would say bring your mala, but keep it in your pocket. If the person is a practitioner and knows about malas and mantras, bring them peace or joy or tranquility. Yeah, I mean, but it depends. Hopefully, you know the person if you're going to even think about doing something like that, if you're even going to be at their bedside. Now, there are people that die in the hospitals here who phone the Dharma Center and ask for a lama to come to the hospital, and they do, they go. And that person may have never come to the Dharma Center once in their life, but they're on their deathbed. And, as Trungpa Rinpoche said, things get very clear when you're painted into a corner. So sometimes when people get to their deathbed, they want to have that. And if they ask for it, by all means. I had a phone call once from a guy in Toronto whose mother was here in Victoria and she was dying. And this guy asked me to go up to Jubilee Hospital and say mantras. But you got to use your discretion and your common sense and whatever's appropriate for the situation. You don't want to upset the family. You certainly don't want to upset the dying person. That's really, really to be avoided. So the short answer is it depends. Where can you find malas for purchase? All over the place. Here in Victoria, there's lots of stores, quite a few. There's not as many as there used to be, but there's still quite a few. From time to time, I go around just out of curiosity, also because sometimes I buy beads and I just see what's for sale. Generally speaking, they're very expensive and they're very fancy. And even the really, really plain ones are not that cheap. And actually, even online, you run into that. It's fairly hard to find fairly plain ones, but there is a place called Tibetan Treasures. If you want, we're not promoting it, we don't get a commission or anything, but it's a Dharma center, Dharma people. It's non-profit, it's not a business. But they are one place that you could look at. You can shop around, there's lots and lots of places online, but frankly, as I said, most of them, you're really buying expensive jewelry. It's not very easy to make malas. You have to have really small hands, which I don't, and you have to be really good with needles and threading, and it's kind of tricky. And it's not for the weak-hearted, but some people do it. So if you're really talented and brave, you could try to make one. There's actually a place here in Victoria that has mala making classes, but I went down there to the mala making class and they didn't teach anything. They just had a whole bunch of beads and you buy the beads and you have at it. And if you have a question, you can ask somebody, but it wasn't really actually taught. I'm sure that if you went online, you could find a video that says how to string a mala. Personally, I don't have the hands to do it. So it's not my cup of tea, and I got enough malas anyway. Go look around, see what you like, and find what you want. If you don't like it and you want a new one, okay. Pink Lotus has the best bead stringing video. Okay, Pink Lotus is another website. They're out of England. I've bought some of them over the years. They're very good. Most of these companies are like one or two people that have gone to Nepal. Most of this from Nepal. Some of it comes from India. I forgot to mention one of the specialized malas here that I just remembered I'm going to show you. And that is for medicine Buddha practice. The medicine Buddha is the Buddha of lapis lazuli, and these are lapis lazuli beads. Lapis lazuli is not a gem, it's an aggregate. It's a bunch of stuff squished together. And the quality of the lapis lazuli depends on what kind of things were squished in there. And the quality ranges from very, 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 not very nice to really, 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 really nice. This one is really nice because Medicine Buddha is one of my practices, and it's also obviously one of the mantra healing practices. So this is one of those examples of a really expensive mala, but it has a specific practice. And so I have one and I use it. I forgot to mention that lapis lazuli is another one, blue. So buying them, you're kind of on your own, but there's a couple suggestions. Okay. Is it okay to wash malas in water? If you need to, yes. I would suggest saying a purification mantra while you do it, like Vajrasattva. For example, when I was given that bone mala, it was really, really dirty. And so I actually soaked it for a year in mild soap. It was bone, and as you probably know, old bones can get dirty. They can get, I don't know, absorbed. They get black sometimes. And so I actually soaked that in mild soapy water for a year. And then I scrubbed it. Scrub, scrub, scrub a lot to try to get as much as I could off of it. I got a lot of it off, but I didn't get all of it off. And then You either waft it with incense or even perfume. Some malas are perfumed, although I would caution you to don't overdo it, because some substances absorb that perfume. You can't get rid of it, and then it's so disgusting you can't use it. So if you do end up perfuming it, be very, very discreet about how much you use. But that's what I did before I actually sent it to a happy home to purify it and clean it. So yes, if it needs to be cleaned, clean it. But generally, they don't need to be cleaned too much. Generally, you shouldn't be getting dirt on it. You shouldn't be using it with, grimy hands after you work on your car engine. Wash your hands before you use your mala, So they shouldn't get really super dirty. I mean, I've got malas that I've had for years and years, and I never wash them. But yes, if you have to, you can. Last call for questions. Okay. If you have any questions in the meantime, send me an email or grab me. That's fine. I'll be happy if I can. And then dedication.
I dedicate the merit for the benefit of all beings. By the merit of these thoughts and words, may I and every being to whom I am linked, when these imperfect forms are cast away, be born miraculously in the realm of bliss, crossing the 10 stages directly after birth. May emanations fill the 10 regions of, for the benefit of all. Bodhicitta is precious. May it arise where it has never arisen. Where it has arisen, may it ever grow and flourish. Thank you, Nakpala, for today's teaching.